Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Practical Parsha, Pekudei edition. This is the close of the second book of the Torah. It's the end of an era. After this week's Torah portion, the Jewish people have formally left Mitzrayim, claimed their mantle, built their Beit HaMikdash, and they're ready for business. So next week we start learning about sacrifices, what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. And of course that's going to be challenging to make practical, but this week's Parsha presented no less a challenge. Pekudei means counting, or more accurately, it means accounting. Accounting that Moshe Rabbeinu performed 3,300 plus years ago. Gold and silver, copper, that had to be audited. The grand audit and the results of Moshe Rabbeinu's audits are presented in this week's Parsha. Now, most people don't like looking at yesterday's audits. Unless, of course, they have stocks in the company. And even so, most of them pay somebody else to look at the audit and give them a very short report. And in this week's Parsha, we go through the details, detailed numbers, detailed descriptions of a Mishkan that was built by our ancestors more than 3 millennia ago. Does it sound practical? Does it sound relevant? Oh, let's see. So Parsha begins with the words, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the accountings of the Mishkan Ha'edut, the Mishkan of testimony that was built, or Asher Pukad, Al Pi Moshe, that was accounted for by the command of Moshe Rabbeinu, Avedas Halavim B'Yadi Samar B'Nar Erekoyen, the service of the Levites who used to put up and take down, transport, and put up again the Mishkan under the tutelage of Itamar, who was the son of Aaron, the high priest. Eile Pekudei HaMishkan, these are the reckonings or the countings of the Mishkan. Rashi has a need to explain to us what is the meaning of Pekudei. And what are the countings? Is this a final counting of what we read about in the past, the previous parsha of Vayakel, or is this an introduction to a new parsha? As the Kli Yakar puts it in very, very simple words, Nechleku HaMeforshim, the commentaries in the Bible have a dispute with regard to this Pekudei, Eile Pekudei. Imela koi al maisa hamishkan shehizkir b'seid vayakel. Is this a continuation? Is this the final chapter about what was previously discussed? Oy koi imashi yizkir b'parshazu. Or does it refer to what's going to take place in this week's parsha? So we have this dispute, and Rashi, right in the beginning, says Eile Pekudei. These are the accountings, the Parsha Zu, in this Torah portion, Nimnu Kol Mishkelei Nidvat HaMishkan. There is an accounting, a reckoning, of all of the weights, that which was given, the donations that were made for the purpose of the Mishkan. Lakesef, Vilazohov, Vilanacheshes. For gold, for silver, for the gold, and for the bronze, the copper. V'nimnu kol kelev l'chol avedasei, and we are also going to enumerate each artifact for its specific use. That's what happens in this week's Parsha. Why does Rashi seem to indicate that Pekudei follows the new Parsha instead of being a roundup of the previous Parsha? So some explain, and you might remember this from our previous studies, that the word Eile is used to begin a new paragraph, or for that matter, a new chapter. If it's a continuation of what was previously discussed, it would say Ve'ela. Ela pasal esharishayim. When you have the word Ela, it indicates a break, a split, with what was previously discussed. You may remember discussing this several weeks ago in Parshas Mishpatim, when it said, Ve'ela ha-mishpatim. And that presents a huge question for us. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim? You begin a Torah portion with a vav, with an and? And the answer was, yeah. Ma'arishayinim nitna mi-sinai, just like the first mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that tell us about the faith of the Jewish people, the credo of Judaism, and all the things that fire our spiritual imaginations, so too the halachas that govern everyday life, the mishpatim. That's what deals with the judicial is Misinai. So over there, we emphasize the ve'ele. Here, it does not say ve'ele pekudei ha-mishkan. So if this was simply a continuation of what we discussed earlier, it should have said ve'ele. It doesn't say that. And Eile Pekudei HaMishkan specifically refers that this week's Torah portion on a literal level is independent, in a sense, of all of the discussions we previously had. We previously talked about the instructions. Moshe Rabbeinu and Parshas Vayakel told Bezalel and Aholiyav and their cadre of helpers what had to be done. And now it's time to make an accounting. And Rashi's emphasis is, Nimnu kol mishkalei Nidvas HaMishkan, that we count all of the things that were donated. The Sefer HaZikaron explains, in the words of Rashi, Kavonas HaRav, the intention of the Master, as he refers to Rashi, Loimar, to tell you, She'ein Pikudei Loshen Minui, the word Pikudei can sometimes refer to appointment, to designation, and sometimes it refers to numbers, to counting. And so, he says, the word pekudei here is not to be understood in the designative form, that something is being set aside, consecrated, brought into holiness. That doesn't take place in this week's parsha. That's a whole other parsha. There's a parsha called Nasoi. And Nasoi, in the fourth book of the Torah, will talk about appointments, creating designations, giving jobs, ensuring that everything has its specific mission, mandate laid out for it, and that everybody is given their specific responsibility. Here, we talk about the kudei, the actual numbers. So this is an accounting Torah portion. That's the introduction. And now that we know that it's an accounting Torah portion, and we know that we are going to be discussing a careful overview of everything that was taken in, there's a very obvious question that's asked by many of the commentaries. Factually, when we start to read about the accounting, we are given the details with regard to the precious metals. If you skip forward to verse 24, I apologize, I didn't tell anybody, it's chapter 38 in the second book of the Torah, called Exodus by some, we call it Shemot. Chapter 38. Excuse me, I just read the first verse of the Torah portion, which is verse 21. Verse 24 continues and says, Kol hazahav ha'asui l'melacha, all of the gold which was used for this work, and all of the sacred things they were doing. And then Rashi goes on to tell you that zahav ha'tnufa, the weight was teisha ve'esim kikar. Kikar is a measurement. Was 29 kikar, or 730 shekel, and 730 shekel. The shekel HaKadosh, in the holy coin, so to speak, or the holy measurement. And then after that, after verse 24, verse 25, the Torah talks to us about kesef pekudei ha'eda. How much silver was there? Ah, silver was ma'as kikar, 100 kikar. It's an enormous amount of silver. Elef Shvameis, 1,700 and Chamisha Veshivim, 75 shekel. This, of course, is the half shekels that everybody gave. right? Bekel agel geilus. Every single head, every individual gave machatzit shekel b'shekel akedesh. So, if you add up all those half shekels, you understand that you have such an enormous amount of silver. That's in addition to the silver that everybody brought, each according to his own spirit of generosity, each according to his or her own desire. And then the Torah goes on to tell us what they did with the silver. And then the Torah goes on to tell us in verse 29 about the copper, that there was shivim kikar, 70 kikar, alpayim va'arba meis shokel, 2,400 shokel. And the Torah tells us what to do with the copper. And then in verse 39, it just says, and there was wools, and there was all kinds of beautiful different cloth, threads. It was made, they made the clothes, they made all kinds of things. And nowhere does the Torah give us an accounting of how much precious wool was taken in, how much special wood was collected, and the various other items that were garnered for the making of the Beis HaMikdash. All we have here is the precious metals being weighed. It's rather odd. The Abarbanel and others posed this question, why is it that the accounting only took place in precious metals? And the Rebbe says that Rashi right away answers this question or deals with it by emphasizing the word Eila Pekudi. Rashi says, Nimnu kol mishkelei nidvas ha-mishkan. The weight. This was a question of volume, question of weight. We're not talking about the value. The value of a fine wool, the value of a fine skin, a fine tapestry. These could have enormous values, but these are not sold by the weight. So the accounting becomes very tedious. You have to itemize each detail, and you have to say how much it's worth. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go through the detailed items to appraise each one so that he can issue a tax receipt. Right? If there were tax receipts, probably would have had to do that. Itemize each detail and how much it's worth. But the truth is, it didn't matter how much the gold was worth, because if you brought an exquisite piece of jewelry, that jewelry did not retain its form. It was melted down. The silver was melted down. You could have brought bowls, and you could have brought candelabras, and you could have brought knives. It was all melted down. Moshe Rabbeinu gives an accounting of the weight. The weight of gold, the weight of the silver, the weight of the copper, the precious metals. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu gives to Jewish people. And why? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu giving us this reckoning? Why are we getting into all these details of how much silver, how much gold, how much copper, how much weight was there, and why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to tell us what it was used for? So, there is a beautiful interpretation attributed to Rabbeinu Ephraim, the great Rishon, who says, Moshe Rabbeinu is counting all this. You know why? Because every one of us is cherished before God. And God wants to convey to us how much He appreciates that even one machatzita shekel was not left out. Every machatzita shekel was accounted for. Nobody should think that his donation was spurned or underappreciated. No. Every single detail, lehidiecho kamachiva v'kadosh baruch liYisrael, to show how God cherished, how much God appreciated. That Hashem wanted to show the Jewish people how everything was melted together, how the details were no longer important, and how everybody had joined into a mass weight. Everybody's gold, everybody's silver, everybody's copper became one amount. 100 kikar, 70 kikar, etc. This is very beautiful. It's a very inspiring homily, but I have to tell you, it is not the common pathway that is taken in understanding Parshas Pekudei. So, for example, the Baal HaTurim, when he talks about Eila Pekudei, he says, if you take a look, you'll see that Pekudei is spelled with a Vav. Why is it spelled with a Vav? He says because there was 600,000 people, and the 600,000 people, each one gave his or her donation, and we want you to know that everybody's donation was accounted for. This was all about accounting, that this was all about integrity, that this was all about honesty. In the words of the Medrash HaGadol, Eila Pekudei, says the Medrash, these are the countings of the Medrash, Mishenigmer Omeleches HaMishkan, from the moment the work on the Mishkan was completed. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, Omar Lahem, Boyu Ve'ese Lefneichem Cheshbein. Moses said to the Jewish people, please, come be my guest. Come look at our books. I will make for you an accounting. And why did he make for them an accounting? Queries the Medrash. God Almighty trusts Moshe, as it is written, Lechein Avdi Moshe. With Moshe Rabbeinu, there is no suspicion. He is above and beyond any such things. B'chol Beisi Ne'eman, who Moshe Rabbeinu is trusted in my entire house, so to speak. He has perfect trust in Moshe. And Moshe says, come make a cheshbon. So the Medrash says something very disconcerting. Ela Sheshama Moshe, Moses overheard. He overheard things, overheard people talking. You know, sometimes there's a little room in the shul that people go to only by themselves. It's a special place. And over there, you have to sometimes get rid of toxins. And nobody knows who's sitting behind the doors when they sit and speak outside. And sometimes I hear some very interesting things. What a lousy sermon. And I'm sitting there, oy vey, if they only knew. Moses heard some very disconcerting things. He heard they were speaking behind his back. Moshe Rabbeinu. As it says, V'hoi ketzei smei shalo'el, Moshe went out of his tent. The pasuk goes on to say, V'hibitu acharei Moshe. They were looking. They were following him when he walked. What were they saying amongst themselves when they followed Moshe with their eyes? Rabbi Yitzchak Eimer Leshvach. Rabbi Yitzchak said they praised Moses. How fortunate you are. What an incredible leader we have. What an amazing man is Moshe Rabbeinu. But Rabbi Chama says, Lignai. They weren't saying nice things. Hayo Eimerim, they say, Re'ei Tzavar. Look how thick his neck is. Look how thick his thighs are. That's what Rabbi Chama said. Mishal Yehudim. He's eating all of our money. He takes everything from the Jews. Sheyehudim, Sheisim Mishal Yehudim. He eats from the Jews. He drinks from the Jews. V'chomah sheyeshle min haYehudim. And then his friend answers. V'chaveidim eshive. Odim sheshol tamaleches haMishkan. Somebody who is in charge of all that money, that enormous capital campaign. Einat mevakish shehi asher. Do you expect him not to be wealthy? Come on! He was sitting there. Who was watching Moshe Rabbeinu when he was raising millions of dollars? Kivin Shishama Moshe Kach. Moshe Rabbeinu heard these words. Omar Lahen, he said to them, my dear friends, Chayechem, by your very lives, Misha Mishkan Nigmar, as soon as the work is done, Ani Eisa Imachim Cheshbin, I will make with you an accounting. I will make with you an accounting. And that is the word, meaning of the word, says the Medrash Tanchuma, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. In a little bit of a perhaps nicer light, not such a harsh light, we have the words of the Tzroid HaMor, who says, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan simply means that Kivan Shenigmer HaMeleches HaMishkan, once the work is done, Nasan Meshachesh b'meduyik. Moshe Rabbeinu has to give an accounting. He has to tell him what we made, what we crafted, what we achieved. It's a moral obligation. That's how you run your company. Kidei lotzeis yidei shemayim v'yidei habriyeis. So that he would fulfill his obligation, discharge his mandate both towards God and towards the people. As it says, V'hiyisim nikiyim mehashem u'miyisrael, in the book of Bamidbar, it is written in the 32nd chapter, one must be clean. Clean hands for God and before the people. And that Sreid Hamar's comments ultimately must be rooted in the Medrash, where the Medrash says, Eile pekudi ha-mishkan, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman taught, Matzinu betorah nevi'im uktuvim. The scriptures, as we call them, the Hebrew scriptures as the world calls them, or they call it the Old Testament, we call it the Only Testament. They refer to it academically as the Apocrypha. So the Apocrypha, for Jewish people, is comprised of three sections. Torah, which is the five books of Moses, Nevi'im, the prophets, and Ketuvim, the scriptural writings, like the Megillah, which we're going to read on the festival of Purim. That spells the acronym of the words, Tav, Nun, Chav, Tanakh. That's the meaning of Tanakh. And oftentimes, we bring a proof from the Torah, a proof from the Nevi'im, and a proof from the Ketuvim. Very often Rashi, when he wants to demonstrate a certain word, the meaning of a certain word, he will reach for the other scriptures that have a similar verbiage. He will usually do so in that order. Torah, Nevi'im, or Ketuvim. And one of the rules of understanding Rashi properly, as the Rebbe taught us, is if he reverses those order, that order, then there's a reason for it. That maybe the pasuk in Ketuvim was more explicit than the pasuk in Torah, and that's why it came first. At any rate, we have Torah, we have Nevi'im, and we have Ketuvim, here says the Medrash. That tells us that a person, sha'odam tzarech lotzis yidei abriyes, a person has to fulfill his obligation for other people. You have to come clean for others. Just as a person has to answer to God, you have to answer to people also. This is totally counterintuitive. A lot of people say, God knows. God knows the truth. I don't care what people say. It's in God's hands. That's not the Jewish way. Sometimes we have to answer to people too. Especially when you're taking people's money. But Torah minayin, how do we know in Torah? It's written, Ve'yisun nikiyim Hashem u'miyisrael, that verse from Chumash Bamidbar, which I just quoted, in the name of the Tzeremar. B'nevi'im inayin, how do we know in the prophets? It says, Elikim Hashem hu yedea, v'Yisrael hu yedea. God knows, and Israel knows. A verse from the book of Joshua, Yehoshua. V'chtuvim, and in the scriptural writings, here we have a very, very famous pasuk, which many people know for a variety of reasons. It's from the book of Mishle, the book of Proverbs. Umatza chen v'seichel toiv. Find grace, find intelligence. Be'enei alekim v'adam. For the eyes of God and the eyes of people. Umimi atalameid. The Medrash finishes with the question, but from whom do we learn this lesson? Because we know that when it comes to learning a practical mitzvah, it's not simply enough to hear a lofty idea. It's not sufficient for us only to have a verse that indicates certain behavior is lofty, moral, appropriate, and mandated. We have to have what's called Maisa Rav. We have to learn it. How do we learn it? How do we know it? Who actually did it? That's why the Torah uses stories so much. Because when we say you have to sacrifice for Judaism, it's a nice theory. We tell you a story of somebody who made a sacrifice. Of Avraham Avinu was ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. Of Yitzchak Avinu who refused to be cowed by those who would threaten him. Of Yitzchak Avinu who gave tzedakah when the economy was bleak and there was no hope. Of Yaakov Avinu who experiences all kinds of challenges and difficulties and responds a certain way. We learn what we're supposed to actually do. And the Gemara tells us that until the lesson is acted on, it's not binding. So it's called in the language of our sages, Maaser Rav, master. If the master did it, then that's the clearest teaching of all. And that's how the Medrash asks, Umimi atalamed? And from whom do we learn this idea that you have to come clean? And the Medrash answers, Mi Moshe, from Moses. Afalpisha kosov boy, although it is written about Moses and only about Moses, only about Moshe Rabbeinu is this statement made. B'chol beisin emanu, God says he has full trust. He has all the keys. Nonetheless, bakesh latzeti de'abriot, he endeavored to fulfill his obligation to other people also. Alachas kama v'kama parnasi hatzibur. How much more so, says the Medrash, those who are appointed as individuals, executives responsible for the welfare of the community, sheim tzrichin lotzeis ayideh hatzibur, that they must come clean through the community. They have to answer. Everybody is answerable. That's the message here. And following along in the words of that medrash, the second medrash, which seems to indicate to us that we have a moral obligation rather than Moshe Rabbeinu being distrusted. Melamed, says the medrash Abayur, shenismanol of Gizbar, that Moshe Rabbeinu actually appointed somebody to oversee him. Dover acher, melamed shemeshe hechmer al atzmei. Moshe was stringent on himself. He was demanding on himself. Va'asachesh ben imat zibur. He made a public accounting. He opened his books for the congregation, for the public, ayitzias ha-mishkan, for all the expenditures that took place in the Mishkan. And here at this point, we see something very, very unusual in the verses. I read these verses quickly before, and I'm going to read them now a little bit more slowly. And I want everybody to follow along inside. This is very important. There's a very basic question that seems to spring out of the pages of the Chumash. When we go to verse 24, when we pick up with the actual accounting, and I don't want to go, the verses in between are very important, and they constitute at least a lecture or two in and of themselves. But let's go to verse 24, right? Kol hazahav ha'asu l'malacha. Talking about the silver, or the gold. The gold that was used. How much was it? Teisha v'esrim kikar. 29 kikar. So let's say kikar is a lot. I don't know if it's a bar of gold in today's terminology. It's a lot of gold. He's not talking about a few trinkets over here. 29 kikar, the exact detail, l'shua meis, l'shleishim shekel, 730 shekel. What was the gold used for? What does it say at the end of verse 24? Say what it's used for? Tabernacle. But what? Doesn't say. Doesn't say. Verse 25. The kesef pekudi o'edo. And then when it came to the silver, which they made an accounting, a reckoning, it was given from the community, from the congregation. Mas kikar, enormous amount of silver. And go through the numbers. And we talk about Dekalai Al-Goylis. Why is it such an enormous amount of silver versus the gold? Because everybody had to give a half a shekel, right? Everybody had to give silver. Silver was the thing that was most, so to speak, demanded from by God. And it was actually three times they collected all the silver. Okay. So there's a lot of silver. 100 kikar. And then, verse 27. Vayihi ma'as kikar kesef. The 100 kikars of kesef, what was it used for? Lotzeket Eight adne hakodesh. It was used to pour the adanim, the holy, the sacred adanim. V'es adne haparochet. What were the adanim? Those are the foundations, sockets. Silver sockets, the boards, the krushim, as they're called in Hebrew of the Mishkan, had little pegs that were chiseled out on the bottom. And these two pegs, I always imagine it looks something like a cinder block, but not really, had holes in the silver casement, silver box, solid silver box, very heavy silver box that was placed in the foundation. And the pegs would interlock. They would fit right into the area, the hollow area within the oden, within the socket. So we know what the silver is used for. An enormous amount of silver and an enormous amount of usage was all made of silver. And the Torah goes into the details. How many adanim were there? And then the Torah says in verse 28, the et ha'elef ושבא המאות וחמישים ושבעים עשר, 100 כיכר was used only for the foundation. Only for the foundation. And then the additional silver, the 1,775, for this they made vavim la'amudim. Pillars that surrounded the outer courtyard had hooks, special hooks that were on top of the pillars. V'tzipor rasheim v'chishak oisim. They were covered with silver, and there were bands of silver along those pillars. So that's what it was used for. Verse 29. Now we're going to talk about copper. Nechoshet ha'tenufa shivim kikar. The amount of the nechoshet, of the copper, is 70 kikar. Alpayim v'arba mea shekel, and 2,400 shekel. What did they use it for? First they made the sockets for the door of the Ohel Moed. And they made the large outside altar, the Mizbech, Migbar Nechoshes. They made all the artifacts, the tools, the instruments that we use with the outer altar for the karbanas, for the sacrifices. And then you had to make Adnei HaChatzer, the sockets of the outer pillars of the courtyard that surround it. Adnei Shar HaChatzer, this kol yizdis HaChatzer Sof. So the Torah gives us a very, very clear description of what was the silver used for, of what was the copper used for, and that ends chapter 38. That's the end. Chapter 39, now we talk about Techelet, about this greenish-blue turquoise wool, Va'agaman, and this kind of purple, this royal-colored, and Telas HaShani, and the red. We took a big day srad, L'shadis Bakedesh, they used it for the sacred clothes, which Rashi explains means that which was used to cover the artifacts of the Mishkan as they were moved, the Kelim of the Mishkan. There's no mention of what the gold is used for. So if we have such a perfect accounting, and as the Rebbe points out, the accounting is not given for the woods, and the accounting is not given for the wools, because this is already getting into the detail, how fine the wool is, how not fine. You can't measure. Nobody buys clothes by the pound. In fact, you don't even buy jewelry by the pound, usually. But a gold bar is by the pound. Or by whatever measurement that's used. Gold bullion is sold as gold bullion. Gold is gold. What happened there? Why didn't he give the accounting then? The silver is clear, the copper is clear, the gold is not. So, the Kli Yakar, after his clear introduction as to the different approaches to the first words, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan, whether they are follow-up or introduction to the next parsha. So the Kli Yakar says, well, in my opinion, it really is a follow-up. It's a follow-up to the things that were built previously. Now we're going to get a detailed accounting, L'kfi shekvar gomru kol melechas HaMishkan. The work of the Mishkan itself, at this point, was already complete. Bichlal u'bifrat. On a general way, the Mishkan was ready. They were ready for occupancy. And in a very detailed way. Down to the little knobs. Down to the little hooks. Everything was ready to be put together. Al kein hayom Moshe sameach. Moshe Rabbeinu took tremendous satisfaction. He was so happy. The work is done. Nishlum ha-meleches ha-kesef, ha-necheshes. The work of the silver is completed. The work of the copper is completed. V'hayolahut liten cheshben, the Kli Yakar says, he was so excited to be able to show to the Jewish people now, here's your dollars at work. I want to tell you where your silver is. I want to tell you where your copper is. Because that was finished already. And, says the Kli Yakar, borrowing on the sources we discussed, Moshe Rabbeinu was keenly interested in clearing his name. Because there were all kinds of people talking. You know, people like to talk. So Moshe didn't want to wait for this. He wanted to give the accounting now. He didn't want to wait until they're going to make the Big Day Kahuna, the clothing of the Kohanim. Now, my dear friends, as you may remember, the clothing of the Kohanim has a precious metal. There's no silver, there's no copper, but there's a great deal of gold. And because there's a great deal of gold, Moshe Rabbeinu, at this point, now that the actual structure, or the materials for the structure, are all fabricated, are all complete, he doesn't want to wait until the clothing will be made. He wants to give an accounting on the structure now. So you can't give an accounting for the gold, because the gold is not finished yet. It's still a work in progress. Because of this, says the Kli Yakar, you'll see when we read the Torah portions, he gives an accounting of how much gold, but he cannot tell them what the gold was used for yet. Whereas when he talks about the silver, when he talks about the copper, he can tell them exactly where it is. Here's your silver, and there's your copper. So the Kli Yakar says, that's a nice answer. It explains things, but not really. That only explains why at this point in the Parsha, we don't have the details of what the gold was used for at this point. But the clothes get finished. The gold is all used. Why doesn't the Chumash give us an accounting, details of what the gold was used for later on? True enough that at this point in the Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu cannot tell us what the gold is used for, but later on he can. And the Kli Yakar asks on himself, and he says, "Lama le'yasa cheshbin min hazav achar shegamar gam bigdei kohuna." If so, pray tell, then why does he not give us the accounting of the gold's use after the finishing of the clothing? Hatshuva ledavar. You want an answer to this? Says the Kli Yakar. This is the answer that I wish to give you. Rabbeinu Bechaya on this week's Torah portion quotes a medrash. And the Kli Yakar here quotes the medrash. And it says like this. Kishaba Moshe Litin Cheshbin, when Moshe Rabbeinu called everybody together, he's going to read the throne speech, give everybody the budget. So when he's going to deliver the budget, Chosru min hamishkal elef, v'shva meis, v'shivim v'chamisha shkolim. He did his math, he did his numbers. Moshe Rabbeinu is a very gifted man. He was an accountant also. Why not? A teacher, a statesman, a leader, a courageous man, a holy man, a prophet. You name it. Moshe Rabbeinu, he can do it. So now he's going to be the finance minister. And he's going to be doing his math. And all of a sudden he realizes, one second, I got something missing. I'm missing 1,775 shkolim. Shachach. Moshe Rabbeinu drew a blank. He couldn't remember what they used that for. Now he's got a problem. Everybody's there. They're all gathered. Moses came. Come and let me tell you where every penny went. And all of a sudden he's stuck. You know, there's a joke they tell that there was a young preacher coming to town, and he asked the old preacher, maybe you could give me your bag of tricks. You know, you've been on the job. You're retiring now. They said, I will tell you the best trick I ever used. Don't use it too often because the people get used to it. But this is fantastic. You can always wake up the whole crowd. They're sleeping. You say, you know, you're a Catholic priest after all. You don't have a wife. You'll say, last night I held another man's wife in my arms. He says the whole congregation will wake up. Their mouths will drop open. Wait, he says, wait, give it like 20 seconds. And then say, yes, it was my own dear mother. He said they won't sleep for weeks after that. Okay, so this young priest is so excited. He's got his work cut out for him, and he's got a bag of tricks. He has the best trick. He could. This is amazing. And it happens on a Sunday afternoon, and everybody's snoring, and you know what it looks like to talk to a crowd of people that are snoring. They don't only sleep in shul, they sleep everywhere, you know. It's a common thing. That's what the clergymen are very good at, putting people to sleep. Somebody told me that they have a child, a relative of mine, who listens to my lectures at night before they go to sleep. I said, thanks for the compliment. I said, not only I'm putting people to sleep here, they even said, this is a wonderful thing. Anyway, everybody's sleeping. He was a very good preacher. Put everybody to sleep. And he's ready to use his big trick, and he says to pound on the pulpit, and he says, all you people are sleeping here. You don't even know. He says, last night I held another man's wife in my arms. And everybody wakes up, and you could hear a hush, and the mouths drop open. They slide to the edge of the seat, and he says, uh-oh, I forgot who she was. Not Chas v'Shalom to make any comparisons, but like, imagine this moment. You're Moshe Rabbeinu. You got people speaking behind your back. It is not a good feeling. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to come clean, whichever medrash you follow, and all the medrashim are true. Some people he had to come clean for. Some people had no questions. Moshe Rabbeinu has a moral obligation. And you're giving the numbers. You're going through the numbers. I'll tell you exactly how much silver, and the silver was used for... what did I use the silver for? He draws a blank. Shachach. V'lehoya yadea ma'asabahem. He didn't know what they used it for. This looks really bad now. What happened? Moshe Rabbeinu could always trust in God. You know, when all else fails, Yotzes Abasko, a heavenly voice rang out, V'amra, and the heavenly voice declared, V'yasa'elef u'shva me'ez v'chamishim v'shivim asavavim la'amudim, 1,775. That's the vavim. That's the hooks. Mekayim Hashanemer. This was a fulfillment of the verse. Loiken avdi Moshe. Moses is different. B'chol beisinemonhu. My whole house he's trusted. When did God say this? When did God publicly indicate that Moses is different? He is to be trusted. Says the Medrash. This was the moment. That was the time that God said this. Now, actually, you can ask the question, how does the Medrash know that? From which word of the Pasuk that says, V'yesha'elef u'shva me'ayis, v'chamishim v'shivim shekel, asavavim, which is verse 28 in our Torah portion, chapter 38, was actually said by God. How do you know that? So very interestingly, some of the commentaries say that the proof of the Medrash is to be found in the words Ve'es Ha'elef, and the. Why did I have to say and the? It could have simply said Vahim Asa Kikar. Elef, that was used for Adonim. Elef Ushva Me'es V'chamisha, 1,775 was used for Vavim Lamudim. And that's actually where the verse continues afterwards. Why does it have to say Ve'es Ha'elef V'sheva? Why does it have to emphasize the extra Vav over there? And the Hey, Ma Ve'es Ha'elef? Melame, that teaches us Sheshchachoi, that he forgot it. And how is it that Moshe forgot it? Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God, don't forget about the 600,000. Remember always the 600,000, says the Tosfos HaShalom. And because Moshe Rabbeinu was focusing on that number, and he didn't yet think about the rest of the courtyard, he wasn't thinking about hooks. He was focused entirely on the idea of the Jewish people coming together, of the 600,000 of the half shekels that created this enormous sum of gold that was smelted into the sockets, the foundation of the Mishkan. So therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was focused entirely on that. And because of that, he didn't think about anything else. He didn't think about the individual large contributions that people gave me at less or people gave more. So that's the reason that we have this idea of Yisrael of Hashva Meish was forgotten by Moshe Rabbeinu, and later Moshe Rabbeinu remembered. Rabbeinu Bachaya explains, when he brings this Medrash down, he explains the reason, so to speak, that the Medrash is able to learn it from Ve'esrael. Says the Kli Yakar, now basing on this Medrash and on the Bachaya's explanation, says the Kli Yakar, actually, I'm remiss. The Kli Yakar is the one who emphasizes The Ve'es Ha'elef. The Kli Yakar explains. He adds that detail in. That's what the Medrash knows it. I'm sorry. Loma Hizkir. Hey Hayidia. Why does it say Hey Hayidia, says the Kli Yakar? Be'elef u'shvam me'es. Elavadei Meisha Shachach v'liyoda manasa mehem. Meisha didn't know. V'ho yisol meranenach rav lemesh l'kachal na'atzmei. At that moment when the Meisha Rabbeinu was stumped, his mouth fell open, he didn't remember. What do you think the first thing they said? Accounting, huh? Accounting he's giving us. 1,775. That's a lot of kikar, that's a lot of shekel. So the baskel comes out. At this point, says the Kli Yakar, once a baskel came out, and once they heard God saying that b'chol beiti nemanu Moshe Rabbeinu was trusted, they saw that God came to his defense, and God is showing how every ounce of silver has been spent appropriately. And there's no chas v'shalom pilfering. At that point, Jewish people felt stupid. We didn't trust Moshe. God had to come and give this heavenly voice. Does Moses really need to give any more accounting? Min hashamayim, from heaven, me'idin olav, the saying, this testimony on Moshe. So at this point, nobody even thought about what would happen with the gold. It was just so obvious, it was so moot, so unnecessary, that from this point and onward, Moshe Rabbeinu stopped giving the specifics. He gave him the numbers, but the specifics of what it was used for, it didn't even make any sense, and it wasn't even talked about going forward afterwards. That's how the Kli Yakar explains this seeming discrepancy in the accounting of this week's Torah portion. The Rebbe once talked about this specific Kli Yakar in great detail. It's actually edited the talk afterward. And the Rebbe suggested that there is a simpler way to explain why Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, did not give an accounting for the Zahav, for the gold. Why does Moses give the accounting? Why? Nobody should say there was pilfering. Nobody should say pockets were lined. Nobody should say that people walked off with any money on their own. This, the Rebbe suggests, is necessary for the silver and for the bronze, for the copper, but not for the gold. Why not? There was an enormous amount of silver, 100 kikar, an enormous amount, like 100 tons of silver, for example. And because there was so much silver, or even the copper, 70 kikar, a large amount, so the people said, 100 kikar of silver? Where the heck did 100 kikar of silver go? It's just crazy money. Where did it go? You raised 100 kikar? You raised $100 million worth of silver? $50 million worth of silver? Where'd it go? They didn't even see the silver. Sockets in the ground, half sunk in the sand. So Moshe Rabbeinu gives them details. 70 kikar of copper. Enormous amount of copper. Where's the copper? Moshe Rabbeinu explains to them where the copper went. When it comes to the gold, there's actually a very relatively small amount of gold. 29 kikar. 29 kikar, they had to build the ark, the cherubim, the table, all the accoutrements that go under the table, the menorah. The krashim, the beams, were coated with gold. The whole inside of the Mishkan was gold. The whole thing was coated with gold. And 29 kikar just doesn't cut it. If it took 100 kikar of silver to make the sockets, how in heaven was Moshe Rabbeinu supposed to make all the artifacts as well as coat the walls, the poles that were made? How did he do that with 29 kikar? You know what the answer is? He didn't. How did he do it? He reached into his own pocket. And when Moshe Rabbeinu has to reach into his own pocket, what are you asking? Where's the 29 kikar? Excuse me, we spent 50 kikar. You want to know where the 29 is? Why don't you ask a better question? I'm just saying 50, I'm picking a number. How come you don't ask, where's the 21 extra kikars? Where'd they come from? I didn't take any money from you guys. I gave you guys a clear accounting. In that case, accounting's not necessary. It's like, imagine somebody raises for a project $20,000, and the project costs $35,000. People say, I want to know where my money went. What do you want to know? The project costs $35,000. I raised $20. What do you want to know? Why don't you say, where did the 15 come from? You know, the story they tell, this guy comes to his boss, yeah? So, you know, there's some money missing on my paycheck. Really? What's, yeah, it's $100 less. What's going on, boss? So the boss says, well, Harry, that's funny. You only noticed this month that there was $100 missing, but last month you didn't notice the accounting mistake. $100 extra, huh? So Harry says, boss, believe me, I noticed it. One mistake I can handle, but two? Two, this is already too much. What kind of complaint do you have to Moshe? How do you have the chutzpah? You can ask Moshe Rabbeinu, what happened with my gold? What happened with my gold? Why didn't you bring more gold? In that case, Moshe Rabbeinu does not owe a cheshbon. Moshe Rabbeinu does not have to give a reckoning, a calculation, if he spent significantly more, and clearly the money didn't come from the community. Only one other place could have come from. Moshe's pockets. If Moshe Rabbeinu himself spent his own money, there was no need for him to give them a detailed reckoning. That's the Rebbe's answer. So simple, so crystal clear, and really so profound. Not even necessary. It doesn't even come to all of this. In that same talk, this is a vignette of that, a very, very long talk. The Rebbe talks about the difference between the structure and between the clothing of the Kohanim, and he says that the structure needed to belong to the entity of the Jewish people, so Moses has to get all the money, and he so to speak, acquires it for everybody, it becomes one common account, whereas the clothing of the Kohanim didn't belong to everybody. That was like the Kohanim had to wear this clothing, but the structure, they all had a piece of that. Everybody owned a piece of the Mishkan. So, why is this practical? Well, it's practical because there are numerous laws that talk about how you have to run a charity. Starting from, for example, the Mishnah in Shkolim, in the third chapter, where the Mishnah tells us how they used to count the shekels that came in every single year when they would ask for half a shekel. Which is, of course, very timely because we're almost at the month of Adar. And in Adar, Mashmin al Hashkolim. Very interesting that this is always read around that time of the year. So, how'd they count the shekels after? Special halacha about how they were brought in three large drums. And the three large drums were placed in an area where they would be counted. What was written on them? A dispute. Either Aleph Beis Gimel, or Alpha Beta Gamma. Chalikas, what they wrote on it. In Greek or in Hebrew? And then the Mishnah says something fascinating. The Mishnah is giving us a little bit of the laws of the clothing that the counter had to wear. Now, you know, today there are all kinds of codes that are written for which clothing is appropriate and which clothing is not appropriate, and so on and so forth, because we live in a crazy world, and I'm not even going to go any further. What kind of clothes? The guy who counts the shekels? Who cares? Says the Mishnah. What are you talking about? He can't even go in wearing his tefillin. In those days, people used to wear tefillin all day. He can't go in wearing his tefillin. How come? Because we're afraid that people will say he slipped some silver coins into his tefillin. He wear baggy clothes with pockets. Oh, I know he's lining his pockets. Everybody says, oh, look at Simon the counter. I wonder how much he ripped off from the Beis HaMikdash today. So he's got to wear clothing that doesn't allow for any silver to be pilfered. It's halacha, the Beit HaMikdash. Who do you think they chose to serve as the counter in the Beis HaMikdash? Some kind of reformed criminal? These have to be holy people, devoted people. God's house! You're going to steal from the Beis HaMikdash? Doesn't matter. When you count, you have to be counting in a way that should be very obvious to that you didn't take anything. Why, says the Mishnah? L'fisha Adam tzarich latzis yideh habriyes. Because a person has to fulfill this charge's obligation towards the people shouldn't speak. As it is written, v'yisim nikiyim me'Hashem u'mi'Yisrael. Bringing the first pasuk that we read earlier in the Medrash, and the Mishnah only goes then to k'tuvim, u'matzachem v'seichel tev, b'nei alikim v'odom. And lest you think that this is only relevant back in the day when they counted shekels and a Beis HaMikdash was standing, I would like to inform you that it is a whole chapter in the Shulchan Aruch, in the big books, talks about tzedakah. And before it starts talking about tzedakah, it starts telling us about the laws of gabai tzedakah, tzedakah collectors. Here's this, or I should say, how's this? Gabai tzedakah, says the Shulchan Aruch, Simen Reish Nun Zayin, chapter 257 of the laws of the section of Shulchan Aruch called Yoredeya, laws of tzedakah. Einam rashayin lifrish zem izeh b'shuk. There have to be two collectors, two people responsible. And when they walk together with the money they've collected for the poor, it's not appropriate for them to separate. Ella, kedei sheyehei zeh perish l'shav zeh perish l'chanus. The only thing they can do is they can be within eyeshot of one another. Which means one is going to a store and one is going to a kiosk and they're collecting money together. What happens if the gabbai tzedakah finds money on the floor? Who does it belong to? It belongs to him. He's a private individual. Don't put it in your pocket, says the Shulchan Aruch. What should you do? Put it into the bag of tzedakah. When you'll get home, then you can take out the money that's yours. But when everybody sees, don't put it in your pocket. Why? The heck with them. I care what they're going to say about me. Shulchan Aruch says, you have to. I'm in God's hands. God knows. Not good enough. You're in a position of public trust. You got to come clean. Somebody comes and pays a loan or money owed to the gabbai tzedakah. He's in public. Don't put it into your pocket. Put it into the package, the satchel, which is set aside for tzedakah. When you'll get home, you'll take it. And the Shulchan Aruch says that there have to always be two people who are in charge of a charitable foundation. Two people. Why? Mipnei hachshad. All of this so that people should not be suspicious. Shenemar, as is written, v'hiyisin nikim me'Hashem u'mi'Yisrael. You have to be clean. Come clean before people's eyes, and the same is true before God's eyes. And the Sif Sikrein and the Shach adds details. And he says about when you collect tzedakah, all of this has to be done in a way that doesn't allow for suspicion. What we call clean. Where did the money go? A public organization has to be willing and ready and able to give an accounting. So they shouldn't think that somebody else took something that doesn't belong to him. Whereas the Taz, the Turizov says, spring quoting Rashi, that this person who's taking a loan, collecting money alone, he's planning to line his pockets, skim off a little bit from the top. It seems kavanosei afagavde be'emes ein echad gevi yechidi. Even though one person couldn't be responsible anyway, because whenever it comes to a position of such power and importance, a person should not be appointed alone. In addition, when it comes to tzedakah, there has to be a control in place. And the Shulchan Aruch goes on with many more halachas, many more details. And the practical lesson is that it's important for those in a public situation, public circumstances, to be clean, to have clean books, and to be able to be accountable. If the money was spent, what was it spent on? What was the reason for its expenditure? And how did you handle the public trust? In this country, we saw a government that really fell from power for one reason. Because they mishandled the public's trust, the sponsorship scandal. That's how public things have to work. And we keep hearing, every few months, we hear another scandal of another politician. And you know what? Unfortunately, the scandals of rabbis and scandals of people who are involved in faith circumstances, situation, it's all wrong. It's wrong. How do you prevent it? You prevent it milechatchila, from the beginning, by living the way Moshe Rabbeinu lived, by being answerable the way Moshe Rabbeinu was answerable. And that ultimately is also the right of the community. If there is a major communal institution, a flagship institution that raises an enormous amount of money, they have to be accountable. What is the money spent on? Is it spent on Jewish things? If you raise it in the name of the Jewish people, or not? Who makes those decisions what the money should be spent on? Can they be spent on things that are antithetical to Torah? Is that okay? Is that fine? Or do you have to say, we may be Jewish, but we're not living Jewishly. Or we don't follow the Torah of the Jewish people. That has to be expressed milechatchila, to begin with. These are all the practical lessons that we, the Jewish people, must learn from the ancient accounting of a Mishkan that was built by Moshe Rabbeinu in his day. And by being honest and living with integrity, we hasten the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu. Everybody knows that tzedakah, mekareves es ha-geula, brings the geula closer. Let us give tzedakah. Let us discharge of the tzedakah with integrity. And let HaKadosh Baruch Hu return us so that we can once again be counting shkolim in the Beis HaMikdash. B'mehera u'bi'ameinu. Amen.